Right, we are by now all friends, so I'm just going to give you an introduction, one insight into myself, just to set the scene for what I'm going to tell you. I am the first to admit, and those of you who know me will know this is true, I'm not just being self-humbling, that I'm nowhere near as clever as certainly these guys at the front and probably you guys at the back as well. What I am is very methodical, because I realise my brain isn't that quick. I spend a lot of time thinking and considering what's going on. I'm a consultant, so I also hoover up ideas. And I'll say this completely unashamedly, I think the presentation, certainly this morning and yesterday, have been absolutely superb. No one has said anything that I've thought that's bollocks. Absolutely brilliant. What I am good at is actually applying wargaming. And I've been doing it, as again, most of you guys in the room from the year dot. It's apposite to mention my signed book by Donald Featherstone from the 1975 Southampton Wargaming Fair on skirmish wargaming. So I've been doing it for a long time, and I find that when I design and deliver a wargame, it works. I don't know why, it's just something in my DNA, and I suspect that would probably resonate with quite a lot of the people here. That's it. Why am I telling you this? I am not going to give you any deep insights. I cannot do what Peter does, and I can't do what the rest of the speakers have done. I'm not going to do that. I'm not clever enough. What I am going to do is just give you what I think are blinding glimpses of the obvious. And I'm going to use that term so many times, I'll just say BGO. So I'm just going to say that is another blinding glimpse of the obvious. But as General Andrew has just said, there is something not quite right with the connection between wargaming and the military, and all I find in my day job is that I am applying blinding glimpses of the obvious because people out there do not. You lot, I'm sure, do, but an awful lot of people, day after day, do not do this. I'm going to give you examples, if I can, recent ones, of where these things actually matter, and I'll summarise this introduction by a bastardised quote from someone much cleverer than me. And someone once might have said, everything in war gaming is very simple, but the simplest thing is difficult. And that is what I find in my day job. So that, if you like, is going to be the takeaway at the end of this. So the purpose is to do that. I would love to put an in order to, something along the lines of initiate a process of improving yana yana yana. And we're going to have a little talk about that later on. But I'm afraid this is probably going to come across a little bit pessimistically because of the friction I find in my day job. I would also say that although we've been talking largely about manual games, manual simulations, 90% of my day job is using computers, and I'll use examples from there. So this applies across the board, be it computer, manual simulation, whatever it may be, these common faults. Those are the aspects I'm going to cover. And in fact, what I'm going to talk about is that. You can see the negativity and the pessimism coming in already. And I'm also, not quite as a look forward, but because it's important, I'm going to touch on, Tom's already referred to this, the military credibility test, which is massively important and underpins everything pretty much I do when I'm using manual gaming. Computers do not come with a credibility test. Manual games do. So that's what I'm going to cover. Although I've said it's pessimistic, some of this stuff is done well. And Colin, I think the possum example over in Afghanistan is clearly something that went well. Another example from further history, in 1993, we were off to Bosnia. General Andrew was the brigade major with 7th Brigade, I was in the staff, and General Andrew Ridgway, who was then the brigadier, when we got to Bosnia, any number of times we would be doing real planning, and then Major Andrew Sharp would have to say, excuse me, Brigadier, we haven't done that, we did that in the preparatory war game. And Brigadier Andrew Ridgway thought, in reality, in Bosnia, we had done stuff, but in fact we'd done it in the war game, in the preparatory cast war game, because he was so involved, we were all so involved and so engaged, that we took that to be reality. So some wargaming is done well, 90% of it, however, is not. The first problem then, definitions. I'm going to start with scenario, and the point I'm going to make, I'm going to come on to wargaming in a second, is that we do not talk a common language. Very few of us actually speak and communicate effectively. Most of us in this room, I suspect, would think that by scenario would mean something like that. Background story, specific exercise. While we're on this slide, I would highlight that directive to you, which is very good indeed, and actually takes the point of defining things like scenario setting and the rest of it. the example of why we don't talk the same language. I was giving a talk on a shared scenarios project at a NATO CACS, that's Computer Assisted Exercise Forum, about 2 or 3 years ago. And there was a lady from the US, as was then, Joint Force Command, talking about rapid scenario generation. There was a gentleman from, I think, Norway, Scandinavia, who was talking about rapid scenario generation. They were both at the point of collaborating and working together, and they had both started speaking. Because I knew both of them, I had to intervene and said, I'm sorry, the gentleman from Norway is talking about that. The lady from GIFCOM, Amy Grom, was talking about rapidly sharing information between databases. Two fundamentally different things. And yet, they were literally, in the space of that, were just about to start collaborating on this shared scenarios project. They were miscommunicating. And that happens across our industry, day in, day out. We do not agree on basic definitions, such as this one. Very, very briefly, because I put it up yesterday, I always turn to Peter. I hoover up ideas, and the reason why I have such high regard for Peter is statistically I turn to his work more than anyone else. So that is why I think he is our leading proponent. That is what war game means, but as we found with DC-DC, you can talk about this for days and actually still not come up with an agreement. And the elements, this is derived from Peter's book of a war game, I showed you this yesterday, in the chart, I just put it up. The so what from that is that, and we've talked about this, that essentially is the simulation, and it can have other bits put into it, but essentially the simulation is only part of the elements of a war game, and all these other bits we've talked about are absolutely critical. So that, the first BGO, when people talk about a war game, it is not the simulation. 90-something percent of military officers think that the simulation is the war game. What happens there is they assume that if a firm brings a computer, the computer is the simulation, that is the war game. So all they have to do is book a room, plug the computer in, and magic happens. It's a phenomenally common state of affairs. It is absolutely frightening. So that's the first example, if you like, of why it doesn't work. Okay, distinctions. Again, we've touched on some of these. Types of war game. I put this up very, very briefly. Again, I'm not going to dwell on it because you guys will get to this. I made the point yesterday, war game sits across there. You do need, if not a different tool, you might have tools which can cope with that side and that side. You do need a different approach, or at the very minimum, you need to be cognizant of the fact that is probably going to require a different solution in some way to the other one. And I'll show you a design process which differentiates between those. But again, the common fault I find is people think there is some one-size-fits-all, generally computer simulation, which will do absolutely everything. The simulation probably won't, and the processes certainly won't. And I'll show you that later on. No one-size-fits-all solution. Distinction still, that is what... Either, come back at me if I'm talking bollocks, that is what the British Army think is wargaming. And they use the term synonymously. And for those of us who were at DC-DC a couple of years ago, having this discussion I've alluded to, there was a lot of discussion about wargaming this, wargaming that. And I kept on saying, no, that's course of action wargaming, that's course of action wargaming. And I was always just gently put into my box and say, yeah, we'll come to that later. We never did because we ran out of time. But that course of action war game is used synonymously with wargaming in the British Army, therefore they talk about wargaming. That is what they mean. That means that, almost by definition, there is insufficient consideration of the other aspects. That is massively useful, but that's a different talk. Okay, verification and validation. Now, I'm not going to say too much of this because I mire myself, but I don't need to explain this. Clearly here, you are talking about making better decision makers. Here, you are talking about making real world decisions. Therefore, you need, clearly, different levels of verification and validation. But I'm still talking about distinctions. We use those two terms synonymously. Go onto Wikipedia, put those in, and the first thing it says is people use these terms interchangeably. I'll come back to this in a second. Now, if I was to put those two things up, they're very, very simplistic. Is it fit for purpose? Are the outcomes sufficiently realistic? I.e., does it do what it is designed to do, whatever? There is a basic split between people from a training background and people from a systems engineering background who use those two terms completely, not interchangeably, the other way round. One set of people will say valid is that, and the other people will say verified is that. That confusion means that people talk about V&V, validation, verification, but sometimes we talk about verification being whatever it may be. It really, really matters if the outcomes are realistic, if you're helping real-world people make decisions. It doesn't matter so much if you're just doing something in a training environment. As long as the outcome is reasonable, then you can conduct that training. The point is that if we cannot even agree on what those two terms mean between the training and the systems engineering community, how can we talk to each other to make sure that the tool or the tools or whatever support whichever side of that equation? I'll talk about that more later if you like, but that's a fundamental fault. Next distinction, education versus training. Happy, they're on the same continuum. Get that, and various people will say, well, actually, it doesn't really matter where on that continuum you are. I think it does, and I think that's something that doesn't get enough attention. You've all seen this, A war versus V war versus any war. The American School of Advanced Military Studies, I did an exchange there a few years ago, were using commercial off-the-shelf computer games where they were at various stages to hit their training objectives. They were using, I think, Midway, they were using Tannenberg, 1917, swamps of Russia and the rest of it, and they were using Gettysburg. That's fine. So that is any war, as long as it supports the training objectives. That's fine. There is an inexorable draw these days for military people to want to do that, and all of the war games, all of the simulations, have to be the war. Now, that's not necessarily wrong, and it's fine in a training context, but is not automatically a default answer. And these other ones, any war or a war, are also probably fit for purpose. But that fact, given the right context, but that fact seems to be generally ignored, and everyone automatically assumes that we have to educate or train for that war. Give you a case in point, just a few weeks ago, some of us, where's Andy? Andy and myself were in a Middle Eastern staff college, and we were designing from scratch the setting, the scenario, and everything that went towards building a war game. It is absolutely, that staff college is absolutely at the bottom end of the education learning curve, and yet when we were discussing the setting, i.e. the geopolitical context we were going to couch the war game in, they wanted that end of a training spectrum, and they wanted to be able to skip from anywhere in the world from one year to anywhere in the world the next year. So this year, we might want to look at Syria. Next year, we might want to look at something with Iran. Absolutely not the right answer, because they needed something right down here, and therefore, any war or a war was the right solution, as black and white as that, but they wanted the war, and categorically, their students would not be able to cope with something which was the war and real world. So these distinctions do matter. Design, absolutely fundamental. Okay, the first thing, this is another BGO, design team. Funny old thing, back to Peter. And my extrapolation is generally those are the people that you need. Again, the common fault here is that military guys who don't quite get wargaming, perhaps most of them, get on and do the planning, and they get so far into the planning, and only then do they start thinking about bringing in these guys, and very, very seldom do they actually even register the fact that you need someone to bring this all together, and very seldom do you get a wargame designer brought in. Setting that to one side, you cannot design a wargame in isolation. And yet that is the approach that most military guys take until it is too late. So having the right design team from the outset is critical. And beyond that, the process. I'm going to talk quite a lot about process in a second. I'm afraid I am a believer in having the right process, or at least having a process. And someone, I don't know who, yesterday said, oh, I'm not a process person. I hate to gainsay whoever that was. I think you absolutely need a process. So I'm just going to show you a few processes. This is, I'm pretty sure, as Peter, again, explained it, that is such a blinding glimpse of the obvious. And we've talked about this yesterday, training objectives, all the way through, the people, the effects, etc., etc. Just note that actually identifying the tool and the technology is pretty much the last thing you do before you sit down and write it all up. Ditto that lot. The processes are right down here as step five. I think that is a BGO. I've never seen anything like that put into place unless someone who has read Peter's book comes along and actually suggests it. How you do it without something like that process, I have no idea. There is, however, a difference. I mentioned this already. That's what you've just seen. This is now a research war game. Very similar. Obviously, you start off with what you want to do, and I'm not going to read the rest of it, but it's more to do with matrix, so on and so forth. Same point though, it's only towards the end of this design process with the entire design team that you look at the tools, techniques and the processes. That is right towards the end. Again, a real world example, most or a lot of exercises start with a simulation. They start with a computer tool and then work backwards to figure out what they can do with it. I'm not going to go into that example because there's not enough time, but that is just a fact of life, I'm afraid. And that's not necessarily wrong. You can be given a tool, because it's expensive, clearly, to either design one specifically or to go out and find one somewhere during the design process. So you might have a tool given to you or foisted on you. That's fine. You can still work around that as long as you follow the process and you come up with mitigations for having a tool that you have to use. No problems at all with that, but you still need the process. And that's what it's all about. So Bill Clinton-like, it's the process, stupid. And if there is no process, I would suggest that whatever it is probably not going to work very well. Not just me saying that, and to turn away from Peter, Erdal Karayiçi is Phil's boss at the NATO Joint Warfare Centre. He has got, correct me if I'm wrong, the brain the size of a planet. He was invited, but the budget didn't stretch, so they sent you instead as a poor substitute. And Erdal runs the computer-assisted exercise conference, the NATO annual one. He's also written a very good book just a couple of years ago. This guy coordinates across NATO all of their computer-assisted exercise training. He knows what he's talking about. He is saying there that it's all about the process. So I'm afraid process does matter. That's just one example of one. We designed this one, Colin's now laughing, for I think the recent FFD. Again, it's not clever, it's not innovative or anything like that, but it needs to be there, and I'm not going to explain it. The only thing I will bring out is the use of swingers who swung between the planning and then they came into the RCAT, WTT, etc., etc. But the point is there has to be a process, and that point has been made repeatedly, I think, this morning. If there isn't a process, I've hidden that slide. Okay, doesn't matter. Right, delivery. That's another example of a process, and that really is a generic a war game delivery, which actually encompasses most of the points, I'm glad to say, that have been said today. So, for example, we know it all starts with that. That's what we'd like to do. Players get really into the bubble, I think was the term used earlier on. It has to be that. They have to engage. All of these have massive complexity within them. The exercise control, the player interface, whether that's role play, whether it's computers, it's COP or whatever, that needs thinking through. All of the various processes that build towards that slide, how you bring together human injects and computer simulations, how you adjudicate that, how they turn into fat, they're then fed into the training audience, how you measure pressure, etc., etc. It's all massively complicated. Unless every single one of those aspects is thought through in detail, it will not work. It's all about the process. The other point I'd make here, this is about bad delivery, is getting the military deliverers to understand the roles of these guys, and I'm sure there are more, is fundamental. I do apologize, Karen, but at the UK Staff College and many other staff college, it is very, very difficult to actually get someone, DS, to be the game controller, to be the person who owns the conductor of the orchestra. The conductor of the orchestra, bringing all this together, that person has to sit in exercise control 100% of the time, not allowed to the toilet, has a bottle, he or she has to be there, because they steer the whole lot. And just getting that fundamental point across is very, very difficult. Worked this year. good stuff. Normally, too busy writing reports, or it's delegated to someone else. So fundamental flaws. These guys tend to, senior officers tend to arrive, it's the seagull effect, they swoop in, shit all over everything and swoop out again. Fundamental problems which really need addressing, and that role again is critical, just coordinating all this lot, working to that guy. Fundamental stuff is not done very well, is not done well enough. Okay, and this one, Tom's alluded to it. One very quick story. I always put up that slide, which I think is just stunningly powerful. I'll just give you 10 seconds to read that. You will notice I hoover up good ideas. Austin, David? Thank you very much indeed. It's already hoovered. Send me the invoice. Now, what I ask military people to do is read that and just consider for every single bullet, how else would you do those things? For every single bullet. It's either very expensive or it's not possible or it is not done necessarily as well as wargaming. Wargaming isn't the only answer, clearly, but that, actually, I think is very powerful. So I'm going to leave that up and just give you one quick story before I finish. We were at a JOTS, Joint Operational Training something system briefing about 2 months ago, whatever it was, and I'd done a little bit of the briefing, and a guy came across who was an SO something, modelling and simulation, and without knowing who I was, he started talking about, well, why do we need computers? Why not just have a room with a few guys and a dice and a map, and they come up with our borders, with answers, and we put that through to the players. And as he was talking about, don't have computers, you just need people with dice, I went to my rucksack and I got out a set of dice that I always have, and the next time he said, all you need is dice, I went, oh, what, like these percentage dice? And he staggered back and said, oh, you'd know who killed the troll. You're a dungeon master. The point is, here's a guy who didn't know me, who was extolling the virtues of dice. Pull a pair out of your pocket and you're a dungeon master. What's going on there? That's me out of time. I've got a couple of other stories if there's time at the end, but I will stop for now. But we have a problem. That's a bit of a look forward. The one thing, yeah. Oh, sorry. No, I do apologise. I'm getting overexcited. I'll just leave that up. I think that's probably blindingly obvious. Overarching doctrine. Your initiative at the BCDC. I know we're waiting for it to come out. Absolutely, fundamentally important. We are building the wargaming community. We have to address the military credibility test, and we have to educate these guys somehow. How we do that, I don't know. We'll talk about it, and it has to start from the bottom so they're used to it. Do apologise. A few minutes later.
No, as the dungeon master, I'll tell you, we started 10 minutes late, so you finished 1 minute early.
Cool. Do you want to...